Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Detroit and was drafted as a goalie by the New York Rangers in 1981. He played in the NHL for five teams over a 22-year career, and he won the Vezina Trophy as the NHL's top goalie in 1986. Today, he's the president of VBK Sports Viewer, a web-based internet training and development company. He's affectionately known as the Beezer. His name, John Van Beesbroek. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
We're with John Van Beesbroek, the Beezer. John, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Oh, it's an honor to be here, Jack.
You grew up in Detroit. Can you talk about your childhood and your parents?
I certainly can. Detroit is a wonderful place. I'll just put that right out there. And my upbringing here were by two separate people that migrated from the old country. My mother from Italy, my father from Belgium. They came to the land of opportunity. My father is a bricklayer, and he worked for his father laying cement and doing bricks, and my mom came with two of her brothers from Italy, one of 13, and looking for jobs and a new hope. And so the common denominator in our family was the English-speaking language. My parents grew up watching television shows, listening to J.P. McCarthy and learning English. So it was a good upbringing from a strong, committed family, and we lived in Detroit. And started to play sports, and I played all kinds of sports. Baseball was a favorite of mine, but then a love for hockey grew. My oldest brother Frank was a goalie. He thumbed through the pages of Sports Illustrated and thought that masks were very cool, and then I thought he was cool, and I progressed down that road.
What's the biggest thing you learned from Mom, and what's the biggest thing you learned from Dad?
Well, from both of them, I learned hard work. My mom came over here and washed dishes and worked three different jobs, riding on buses all over Detroit, and cleaned homes, and I just saw a work ethic in her. And my dad was the same type of commitment to laying bricks day in and day out, and having an opportunity as a 14-year-old to work for him and realizing how hard it was. I realized I didn't want to do that, but hard work would be the staple of our family.
Who was your hero in hockey growing up?
Well, in hockey, at that time, back in the late 60s and getting into the early 70s, I mean, my favorites, I probably lived vicariously through other people's favorites, and that was Gordie Howe and Ted Lindsay and Alex Delvecchio and the guys for the Wings, and then grew fond of goaltenders and watched the likes of Eddie Jockeman, who was a great with the New York Rangers and who became a Detroit Red Wing. So, and Rogie Vachon, who was out in L.A., a small guy like myself, and then obviously became a Red Wing. So I followed the Wings a lot, and then as it got to my time to excel, you know, the teams were starting to take a turn, and the Ilitch family bought the team here.
Speaking of the Rangers, 1981, they select you as the 72nd player in the draft. How did you learn about that?
Well, I took a different road than most kids growing up in Detroit. I went to play hockey in Canada, which was a risk. At that time, the NCAA instituted a rule that if you go play major junior hockey in Canada, it violates your NCAA opportunities. So players were going back and forth. So I took a risk and went up to Sault Ste. Marie and found out really after a strong first year that people were interested in me, and then the draft happened. I didn't even know it was an 18-year-old draft, but that's how I came to know, and it was a great opportunity.
You're 18 years old. It's December 5th, 1981. It's your first NHL game in goal with the Rangers in Madison Square Garden. Tell us about that night.
Well, I had been with the Rangers on emergency recall for a few weeks, actually. Herb Brooks was the coach of the team, and I was fondly looking on at how things were operating, and there was a rash of goaltending injuries to John Davidson, who's now the president of the St. Louis Blues, great broadcaster. And Steve Baker was another goalie who was with the team, and they were injured, so I wasn't going to get a shot. And then we played back-to-back games, and one night we were in Colorado, and then the following night we were going to be back at Madison Square Garden against Calgary. And I got the start against the Colorado Rockies, who are now a baseball team. And it was great moment.
And you won the game 2-1.
Yeah, we've won the game 2-1.
The hardest shot from the point. Who were they?
Well, the hardest shots were always the guys who possessed the knack to get the puck through and to the net. And number one would be Ray Bourque on that list. He was an unbelievable, gifted player. Played for Boston most of his career and then won the Cup with the Avalanche in 2001. But Al MacInnis is another who was a great shooter from the point, played most of his time with Calgary and St. Louis. I'm sure everybody remembered Al MacInnis' long slap shot that beat Chris Osgood through the legs from the red line, but I won't even bring that up because it's it doesn't look good. But those guys that could shoot the puck, one guy who was gifted, grew up here locally, and who's going to enter into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame this year is Kevin Hatcher. Kevin was a great shooter from the point.
You're a tiny man. Some refer to you as an undersized overachiever. How did you see around all these bodies, John, to make these saves?
Well, you know, it's one of those things where it's not fun to be small. And in order to achieve, I mean, I didn't look at myself as an overachiever, but in order to achieve, you have to do things differently. I tried to rely on my instincts as much as I could, but you really had to program yourself and be prepared. So I started something called visualization and used some mental techniques to help me stay in tune with the game a lot longer and focus and concentrate. And you can wrap all those up in your hands and make it into something that's called visualization. And it's a great way to get prepared. And I think there's a lot of modern day players in all sports that are using these techniques, even though they're only small.
We're talking to John Van Biesbroek, and I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're with John Van Biesbroek. John, in the 22 years in the NHL, you started over 1,000 games. So you stood at that goal when the national anthem was played. In New York, Chicago, Florida, Pittsburgh, Minnesota, etc., etc. What was that like, standing for the national anthem?
Well, the national anthem is a wonderful thing. It pays tribute before every game to our nation, the people that have fought for our nation, our flag, and everything you stand for as a United States citizen. And, you know, playing with a lot of players from Canada, you know, I think it's more special for a player from the United States to stand, and you get the goosebumps before you're going to really play a game. But I think that what happens is it's your final preparation. People look at it as paying a tribute to the flag, but players look at it as these are my final moments to collect my thoughts and get going again, because at that moment You know, you pay honor and then you flip a switch and it's game on time. And I think that it always was the it still remains that way for players. It's that waiting room, so to speak. It's the green room for every person who plays sports for a profession that says it's time to go.
Was there one singer in all of those arenas that was better than anybody?
Well, playing 10 years in New York, there was a fellow that did the national anthem there. His name was John Amarante. I don't know if John still does the anthem, but he did it with such great enthusiasm that it invigorated you when he did the anthem.
As a goalie, when you make a mistake, the world knows. You know, in college, they're yelling, sieve, sieve, sieve. What was that like when you made a mistake?
Well, sieve, sieve, sieve is not something you want to enter into your data bank at that time. But, you know, what happens is there's a lot of lowlights in playing goal. And I think that people don't understand a lot of the lonely rides home after games and the coldness that you feel, the emptiness after giving up a goal in overtime or having really a bad game. But right after a goal was scored, I used to develop a technique and developed a technique, I should say, where I had to put that out of my system and play for the next 5 minutes and reboot the computer, so to speak, in order to get my head, you know, back around a confident stage. You know, those are moments in a game where you really have to park them and set them aside. But confidence is so fragile that if you're a fragile human being and you're playing goal, you're not going to be playing it for very long. So you develop techniques in order to help you through the tougher times.
If there's a listener tonight that says, John, I've always considered myself a confident person, but with these unbelievable economic times, it's one setback after another, and my confidence is shaken. What do you say to that man or woman?
Well, I'd say to them that personally, my confidence, and I'm not going to speak on their behalf, but my confidence is knowing the Lord. I don't put my confidence in myself. I know that, you know, that my beliefs and my faith put it in a greater place than myself. You know, God's a major figure in my life, and I'd have to say that to that person that, you know, you're not going it alone. I mean, there's others like you that are going through times of failure, but don't put your confidence in yourself. Put your confidence in a greater, number one, greater good, a greater person in Christ himself, and take a look at his life and see the confidence and some of the failures that people brought forward in his life and the factors that he died for you in order for you to have eternal life. I mean, those are the ultimate things where I would put confidence in. And if you take them completely out of context and make them personal, then you're going to be in a downward spiral.
Let's go back to 1986. You're named the best goalie in the world. You win the Vezina Trophy. How does someone become the best at something?
Well, that's an interesting set of circumstances. One thing that I speak about quite often during that year, and people don't know this, is there was a major tragedy in the National Hockey League that year. A goalie by the name of Pelle Lindbergh was tragically and fatally lost. And he was playing for the Philadelphia Flyers at the time, and he crashed his car and he lost his life. And I truly believe that Pelle would have gone on to win a second Vezina Trophy if those circumstances wouldn't have happened. And I became the benefactor, the next person who won the Vezina Trophy. And I look at it as not only in the goodness of my play, but the factors that go along with it. It was an amazing circumstance.
22 years in the NHL, and you never won a Stanley Cup winner. Are you okay with this, John Van Beesbrouck, looking back?
Well, I can't say that I'm okay with it. You know, I mean, people often ask me that question if I'm doing some type of interview or talking about it, or even if I'm just sharing a cup of coffee with someone, is, yeah, that's something I do regret. Got close to it a few times, and but I can't change the circumstances. I can't turn back the clocks, and there's no mulligans in hockey. And so I respectfully have to say that, you know, that I put it in a positive place, and I've stolen a saying from a great player, Mike Foligno, who was once a Red Wing here, and he said, my Stanley Cups are my four kids. And I kind of stole his line, and I have four boys, and they're my Stanley Cups.
Have you ever held the Stanley Cup, and how do you explain the magic of that cup?
I have never held it, and the magic of it is, I think, an appreciation for how difficult it is to win. Probably, well, it's in my bias that it's the most difficult trophy to win in sports. The amount of games and effort that has to go into the marathon of winning, and the commitment and desire and playing with injury that shows the fortitude and endurance makes it the toughest trophy in sports. Now, respectfully, people will argue that point, but like I said, my bias is tell me that, and I think that that's why it's so special, and I think that's why it's so magical, and it has a great history.
I'm struck by hockey players, more so than other sports athletes, and the great respect they have for the game and each other. John Van Beesbrouck, why is that?
Well, I think number one reason is that a lot of the players are from rural towns and small beginnings. I truly believe that there's a humbleness that is inert with hockey players just because they not only respect the game, but they respect where they came from. You'll often see in commercials now promoting the game of players who have won the Stanley Cup in the past in the small towns that they take the cup to, and they parade through cities that, and towns, I should say, that have 500, 600 people that live in them, and they know how much it means to the city, and you don't really see that in any other sport. You don't see, you know, people parading through towns with the, you know, World Series trophy or something like that. I think it becomes a very personal thing to everybody who gets to know that player that grew up in that town. And I truly believe that has created the respect throughout every player.
We're talking to John Van Beesbrouck, and he was inducted into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame in 2007. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to the president of VBK Sports Viewer, John Van Beesbrouck. And in a previous segment, you mentioned not visualization, but visualization. Canadian, talk to us about visualization.
Well, visualization is a technique of really preparing the mind to do something. In all, whether you're an actor, actress, whether you're a professional athlete playing some sport, or the top amateurs in the Olympics, there's certain steps that you have to go to in order to see yourself succeed. Steve Carlton, the famous baseball pitcher back in 1972, was quoted in an article saying that he visualized the game before he pitched it, all nine innings. He struck out every batter. He pitched a perfect game. And I think that pretty well sums up what visualization is the advanced thinking and thoughts in order to prepare yourself to do something successful. And without it, you wouldn't have the grace in a figure skating Olympic champion. You wouldn't have a basketball player being able to pass, shoot, and do some of the amazing plays. And for a hockey goaltender, I think it becomes a staple of how you are going to get prepared to play the game. And I hope, I'm hopeful that that captures visualization.
You mentioned the Olympics. Can you share with us the famous story about Michael Phelps in the Olympics?
Yeah, I read in preparation for a seminar that I had to give about Michael Phelps, and that the uncanny ability that he has to get prepared for an event. And one of the stories had to do with in Beijing, you know, they asked him, why is he, you know, so good at whatever distance it was. And he said, well, back when I was 12, I used to do something called visualization. And it was part of meditation where I'd let my limbs loosen up and I would visualize seeing myself swim so that at this critical point, if anything happened to me in the middle of it, I would just swim and have visualized myself all the way to the finish. And amazingly enough, in the Beijing Olympics, water got into his goggles and he couldn't see, and he was really, you know, just in a bad way. But it was the visualization that he didn't have to see himself to the finish physically that brought him to a new world record. And I just thought that that captured what visualization is, because it was his process and it wasn't really reactionary to a problem with the goggles.
John Van Biesbroek, you're the president of VBK Sports Viewer. What does that company do?
Well, VBK stands for Visually Broadening Knowledge, and what it does is anything that you visually would capture in a camera, you can upload it to our system, and within it you can see yourself and cut clips and share them with other people, whether it's on your team or publicly. Someone could cut a clip being a goaltender and send it to John Van Biesbroek to be able to make some comments on and send some comments back to that individual. So it's a system that I've created that I thought that I would need growing up and developing, you know, through youth hockey, that would help me in the mental stages of training. And I don't think, like, right now anybody that trains for any sport is out there training 85 to 90% physically, and they train very little mentally. You can do the math on that one, but I just thought that this would be a great system to help young athletes.
If you want to learn more, www.vbksportsviewer.com.
Absolutely.
Being a world-class athlete and Christ-centered is not the most common two things you put together. It's a rare combination. And you are that. Talk to us about that.
Well, I would say that I'm constantly working at that. You know, there are some things in my life that happened significantly that I thought that I could control, such as, you know, the things going out on the ice and within my home and within my relationships. And speaking of my number one relationship with my wife, you know, people told us that you have kids and you'll grow closer. And that wasn't necessarily the case. And coupled with the fact that my oldest brother, Frank, grew into a state of depression and ultimately led to a depression that took his own life, I had a lot of questions of why and didn't feel any emotion after I found out about him taking his own life. And so we had a Christian coach on our team that started a chapel. His name is Roger Nielsen, and a fellow came and presented a chapel to us. And a chapel is basically sitting down and open up the Word of God. And he didn't say anything necessarily different than my upbringing, but we started a personal conversation together and basically captured and said, if you really want to help yourself, you'll just pray a prayer to the Lord and get Christ-centered. And that's what I did back in 1993, and it's helped me every day since. Like we referred to at the top of the show, I put my confidence in the Lord, the creator and sustainer of the world, the creator of the universe, and I think that it's so much bigger than me to know that I have a friend, and he knows me by name, and there's a great amount of resources that he gives through his word that through the course of our walk that create our morality and sustains our every step.
Aubrey Anderlin wrote a book a number of years ago, Man of Steel and Velvet. Most athletes, or a lot of athletes, they've got tremendous bravado, trash talk, etc. You're not like that. How can you be successful being humble and being a world-class athlete?
Well, I think that by my very nature, if I look at myself, I think I'm very competitive. I just think that you can do it within the rules of the game and within the fact that in hockey there's no out of bounds, so just about everything is within the rules of the game. So you can compete at the highest level, and if you step outside of those boundaries, you're going to get penalized. The rules state that. And it's no different in your walk in life, and therefore you can be meek the way that Christ was meek. You can be humble, you know, the way that Christ was humble, and still be competitive the way that Christ was competitive. And I think that oftentimes we look at people in humanity and in human life, and they take on a different form. And what we find out is, you know, that we get failed by humanity, by the people that we looked up to. But there's one that we can look to that never will fail us. And I think that that's the true humble beginning that you can take a look at and learn from, rather than taking a look at maybe even John Van Beesbrouck and seeing his failures and not necessarily his successes. The world will tell you about all my successes, and we can talk about that, and I love to talk about them, but the real things that I look at are my failures and some of the losses and the way that I've handled myself and the way that I handle myself in public and the way that I handle myself to my children has to line up.
We're talking to John Van Beesbrouck, and I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Anything is possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with the Beezer, John Van Beesbrouck. John, we've just started another NHL season. Who do you like this season?
Oh, I'm on the spot now. It's hard to pick. It's a different world in hockey now. After the Chicago Blackhawks won the Stanley Cup this past season, they lost some main parts to their winning the Stanley Cup. Their goaltender went to San Jose. Dustin Byfuglien goes to Atlanta. And we can go down the list of guys and where they... That's unheard of in this sport. So I'm not going to pick Chicago. I'll put it to you that way. I do like Detroit. I like the addition of Mike Modano and some of the rear guard. I think that the young goalie is doing quite well for them. And you know, I think that last year proved that. So I like Detroit, actually, in the West, even though I think that a sleeper in the West this year is Edmonton. I like the fact that the young players they got, and especially in Taylor Hall, who won a couple Memorial Cups with the Windsor Spitfires, I think that that young man has a lot of leadership in him, and I think Edmonton's going to be a surprise. And in the East, Ottawa's going to be a surprise, I think. You know, they picked up Sergei Gonchar as a leader on the point from the Pittsburgh Penguins, and on the power play means so much, and he's a master on the power play. And I think Ottawa's going to surprise some people this year. But, you know, how can you look past Washington and Pittsburgh, Crosby and Ovechkin? But, you know, teams have a way of emerging together, and you know, there's always surprises. So I'm just going to go on the limb and say Chicago is, because of the players they lost, they're not going to win this year.
Who's the best player you ever saw?
Well, the best player I ever saw was Mario Lemieux. Not only did I see him on the ice, I saw him in nightmares. Mario scored more goals on me than he did any other goalie in the National Hockey League, somewhere in the 30s, I believe. But Mario was a combination of size, strength, agility, and really the art of how to play the game at the center position. All that determination he had, I just thought, playing in the East so much, we saw him seven times a year, and you know, every time 66 jumped over the boards, he captured your attention. But who could argue with double nines and Wayne Gretzky? Wayne's probably done more for the game than any other player, and you know, I just think that he's been the consummate ambassador for the game. But again, living vicarious through Detroit and Detroiters, Gordie Howe was the greatest, you know, Mr. Hockey. And even though I didn't watch a lot of his games live, I saw him play on film and saw the way he carried himself, and what a great gentleman.
What made Stevie Yzerman so great?
Well, Steve, I played a lot against, and it goes back to his days when we were both midget hockey players and playing for the Nepean Raiders. And then on to Peterborough, and I was playing in Sault Ste. Marie. So I saw a lot of Steve, and his quickness and determination and the ability to be shifty on the ice. He's one of the most shifty players to play. And then when he got to Detroit, and, you know, after a few years here where they started to really build a strong team and Scotty Bowman came along, I thought that his quiet spirit was the leadership at the right time for this team. It didn't have to be a guy that had to say too much in the locker room, because what he said, maybe as little as it was, meant things to, and it was special. And I think coupled with Scotty Bowman, it was just a great combination. So his quiet leadership I often respected.
Chris Chelios.
Chris, I played a lot of hockey with on USA teams. I'd say that Chris is the, you know, the ultimate gladiator. You know, when he played in Montreal and won a Norris Trophy, he was an offensive guy. And then he just was a committed guy where he blocked shots and do whatever the team would ask. It wasn't flashy. It was just determined. And then his longevity speaks for itself, where people were calling him a freak and all that stuff. Well, it's not really that. It's just that he was so determined. He was the ultimate gladiator.
Nick Lidstrom.
Nick is, you know, in my estimation, maybe, well, not maybe, if I give it my estimation, I think he's the best modern-day defenseman I've played against and watched play, just because of his outlet passes and his heads-up play and the way that he's able to cut off the ice. I mean, it's no, you know, coincidence that he's won five Norris trophies. And you know, he just is a combination of calmness, again, on the ice, and probably a lot has to do with his Swedish background and the cerebral nature that comes with those European players to be so calm. I think that his calm demeanor in big games is what, you know, Nick Lidstrom's identified by.
Speaking of great defensemen, Bobby Orr.
Yeah, Bobby Orr was probably the single defenseman that changed the defenseman position. Having won eight straight Norris trophies as best defenseman, he transformed the defensive position into being an offensive position. Being able to skate through the whole team and score a goal, that's unheard of. And now anybody who does it, it's always related to Bobby Orr. He went down. And I would have to say, as a young boy watching Bobby Orr, there was no player that you mentioned in the backyard more than Bobby Orr.
Goalies, Marty Brodeur.
Well, Marty probably is going to go down as the best goalie in all of the NHL. And I wouldn't disagree with that, because of the fact that he just loves to play the game. His records are amazing, but his commitment to technical parts, his footwork, and the way that he plays a Jacques Plante type of goaltending transforms, you know, the stand-up goalie to the butterfly goalie back to the art of making saves. And what you see today is just a lot of blockers out there, and Marty, you know, sets himself apart because he's such a great combination and smart goalie. So I'd have to say Marty's the best.
Dominic Hasek.
Well, Dominic was definitely the most unconventional, but he played single-handedly one of the best games I've ever seen played, and that was over in the World Championships in 1984 in Prague, Czechoslovakia, where the Czechs beat the Russians for the first time in their history and won the World Championships, and it was Dominic Hasek against the Fab Five and all the players that came over to play for the Red Wings after that, and Fedosov and Larionov can tell you that Dominic really stole the world championship and the gold medal back then. So I have a lot of respect for Dominic, though.
As our time winds down tonight, John Van Biesbroek, what advice would you give to our young listeners?
Well, the first piece of advice I would give them is put your faith and trust in the Lord and not on yourself. And know that there's more support in doing that than there is less. And unfortunately, we live in a world that doesn't promote that very often, and I might be odd by saying that, but I'm living proof of that you can change your life around and put it in the right direction. And maybe that's not a change for our young listeners. Maybe that's just or an endorsement or a pat on the back to say, that a boy, keep after it, keep wanting to do what's right. And you know, we live in such a mixed up world that oftentimes, you know, they don't get the right message, whether it's from a father, mother, grandparent, but stay the course.
John Van Biesbroek, you're a Hall of Fame goalie, but you're a better man. Stay the course. Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spawn. Yeah.